Wednesday. It's December 15th, 2016. I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast you can hear broadcast in part on WGN Radio. That's on my Saturday afternoon show at 1:30.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune.
I'm Eric Zorn, the distinguished columnist. Works Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Boy, and you wonder why Kristen McQuarrie doesn't show up all the time to these
things. Hard to
can't
believe.
Take all my branding. Is there?
Thank you, Eric. Eric wants to start the conversation today. We'll talk about the pay for legislators in Springfield and the notion that they should have their pay withheld like everybody else. That is, they don't get to cut in line. They'll get their checks like everybody else that works for with the state of Illinois. Where's this idea coming from, Eric?
Well, it actually came from Pat Quinn. If you want to go back a few years, Quinn decided that he was going to hold up some payments. He was going to hold up the legislative pay but while he was trying to get pension reform, I believe, was what he was insisting that they come back and do. And if they weren't going to pass pension reform, he wasn't going to let them do it. And then in this most recently, Comptroller Munger, who Leslie Munger, just to review the bidding, Judy Bartopinka died shortly after she was reelected. In 2014, the governor then appointed Leslie Munger, and Leslie Munger, as the comptroller, decided that she was going to withhold these paychecks. And she's going to pay them, but she just puts them back in line with all the other people who are getting paid late by the state. And then during the campaign, she ran on this no budget, no pay slogan. But Susana Mendoza, the Democrat who was challenging her in the special election most recently, also said she was going to be no budget, no pay. The legislators, a group of Democratic legislators, a couple of weeks ago, just before Susana Mendoza was sworn in, they sued Leslie Munger, the comptroller, to get paid back, you know, on a normal schedule. The Democrats then went on Chicago Tonight this week, and they made this argument that this was a tactic of Governor Rauner's, and they were blaming Rauner for this, and it really sounded tone deaf and obtuse for them to say that, because it isn't Governor Rauner's idea anymore. This comes from Susana Mendoza, who is a Democrat, who is saying, no, I'm not going to pay you on time, basically because you're not doing your jobs. Now, having said all that, having set this all up like this, making the lawmakers look bad, I've been on record. I said when Pat Quinn tried it, I said it was a bad idea. When Leslie Munger did it, I said it's a bad idea. And now that Susana Mendoza is doing it, so I, you know, bipartisan view and my part is this is a lousy idea.
Why?
Because you can't extort. I mean, it is the opposite of extortion. I mean, or it's similar. You're saying, look, I'm not going to pay you. I'll pay you if you do the job that I want you to do. But if you don't do the job that I want you to do, I'm not going to pay you.
Well, the new president does it that way. And by the way,
I think it's a bad idea.
First of all, the new president doesn't do anything yet. I mean, we'll see what he does when he.
Well,
does
he has
it,
but a history in the private sector of not paying people for jobs they've done.
Well, that's for jobs they've done, and this is, but. Is Governor Rauner's secretary being paid timely, or is Mike Madigan's, you know, staff being paid timely? They are, right? We're just right, and Eric.
I think so.
We're talking about vendors and contractors who are not being paid in a timely way.
Other state employees are being paid on time.
Well, what is your point, Steve Bertrand?
That's my point. I just don't think you can create this class of state employees who will be unpaid if every other state employee is being paid on time.
Of course you can. Because they're not doing their jobs. If you hired someone to dig a ditch in your backyard and they show up, they talk about doing the ditch, they're looking at your backyard, they're measuring it, they're thinking about it, they're considering it, and then they go home for months at a time, you wouldn't pay them.
Well, that's one part of a legislator's job is to come with a budget compromise. They have a lot of other things that they are doing. They're showing up down in Springfield. They're going to the meetings. They're representing their constituents on all kinds of other little things. You know, the governor is constitutionally obligated to present a balanced budget. He hasn't done that. Should we not pay anybody on his staff because they haven't done their job of presenting
a budget? No, maybe you could argue.
I just don't think you want to get into the habit of using the financial levers to try to get people to do what you want them to do.
But financial levers are exactly what they do in business. If you don't write a column, Eric, you don't get paid. You don't have a job.
Right.
But if I don't do cartoons, I don't get paid.
Okay, if you don't write a funny cartoon, you still do get paid. And I think
that's
what we're talking about. I mean, these legislators are still going to work. They're still passing stopgap plans. They are not doing what any of us wants them to do, but they are still doing it, and so I think that they still get paid.
I don't see how Eric can say that treating the legislators like other people is punitive. It's just treating them like other people.
It's maybe meant to be, but it's meant to be punitive.
Well,
it's
who cares
punitive.
What their motive is, Eric?
I don't want the next governor to say, if you don't pass my anti-abortion law, I'm not going to pay the legislators. I don't want them to have that kind of power.
Or better than that, Eric, you can step it back. Even if you don't pass my anti-abortion law or any law, then I won't sign your budget. Therefore, you will not have approved a budget. You won't get paid.
You know what bothers me, too, about this, though, Steve, is that I don't even think it makes that big a difference. You know, we're getting all a huff about something that really only makes us feel good. Aha, we showed them. Now they got to wait to get their paychecks. You think that's going to get a budget passed in Springfield or meaningful legislation move forward? I think it's kind of pointless, the whole conversation anyway.
Well, I mean, you're ending up with like my state rep is driving an Uber because he this is his sole source of income. He hasn't been paid since like August. So I mean you have situations, and I don't want him to cast a vote because he feels like he has to cast a vote a certain way in order to feed his family. I think that's a really bad precedent, a really bad idea.
By the way, speaking of salaries, Alderman Corcoran? No, Cochran, right?
Cochran.
So I was looking at this guy just just for a second. He's making $119,000 for the city. He's got a police pension of over $60,000. I'll bet his gross for the year is around $200K. And he has got 15 counts against him of graft and corruption, the likes of which we always see in the Chicago City Council, but I don't understand what's driving him. He's got to make a $5,000 payment for his daughter's tuition, and I'm thinking if you've got $200K coming in, you ought to be able, or she ought to be able, to find a way to afford that. That story just struck me as kind of sad in a way.
Oh, it's almost always sad. It's always despicable that someone who has the public trust betrays it. Apparently, he has gambling issues, and that's what the story, the deep story goes into.
Right, as you read into the story, it's like, yeah, he took out money from ATMs while he was from gambling places. You know, the thing is though that wealth doesn't seem to be associated with corruption. I mean, George Ryan was doing perfectly well when he was pocketing money, and you know, he was getting money from janitors. If you remember, he was taking Christmas gifts from janitors in the state, and so the idea that corruption is linked to need. I think that's not. I don't think there's any historical basis to that. I think it's linked to greed.
Yeah,
that's
more power.
There's a tweet right there for you.
I think betraying the
corruption linked to. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Betraying the public trust might be exaggerating. I don't think any of us really have trust in the people who are sitting.
You got to have
council.
Trust,
well,
in
especially
them to begin with.
This is the 20th ward. He's the third alderman from that district in the second in a row.
It's like used to be like Secretary of State in Illinois would go on to be governor. 20th ward alderman now go on to prison.
I do want to go on record here as saying that when he ran for re-election one year, he's running against Rhymefest, who is a rapper, but he's a good guy, smart, diligent.
Many times on this radio station.
A terrific guy. And I say we should endorse him. And everyone poo-pooed because at that time they broke down the wards, and each one of us got, do you remember that, two or three wards to go through? I got one of them was the 20th for me. And I said, Cochran was not impressive at all. And they said, oh, no, he's a former police officer. Surely he's a terrific alderman.
I went, you've been vindicated, Scott.
Yes. So, ha!
Well, you know what bothered me about the story was just a reminder of how much power the aldermen in Chicago have. You know, for contracts or if they want to put up a certain type of building in their ward, it's got to go through him. Well, maybe you could do a little something for me. And maybe it gets done that way in every city in the country. But, boy, it sure seems to be a stumbling block for a lot of aldermen in Chicago.
Has it ever happened that an alderman was sitting in council chambers during a meeting when word of his indictment came out?
I love that. Isn't
that
great?
Was just an amazing.
And then who walked over and showed it to him on his tablet? It was
Burke.
Burke. By the way, yeah. And it was the big Cubs party they're having there in the city chambers. Yeah. And then he goes, oh, listen, you might want to see this.
You might hit the road.
Ed Burke, buzz killer.
I know. You couldn't have waited until after
right.
the party.
That's what it's about. It's about he's a Sox fan, Burke.
By the way, I was thinking, Steve, I might finish the rest of the year communicating with my listeners in Trump speak, which would be short bursts of tweets. I don't really have the rhythm or the lingo down, but they always end with a one or two sentence, you know, like
shame.
Apologize.
Sad. Disgraceful.
Yeah, yeah.
Disgusting.
Reduce dues.
He took on Vanity Fair today because Vanity Fair trashed his restaurant in a review.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
And I'll have to find it while you guys are talking, but yeah, he basically said, you know, it's a terrible magazine. And
this is the president of the United States. This is the same guy who a couple days ago announced that he's going to continue to be executive producer of The Apprentice and do it in his spare time. Now, I was unaware that presidents had that much spare time.
Kellyanne Conway said, well, presidents golf, and they forever get criticized for golfing too much. So if Barack Obama has time to golf, then Donald Trump has time to executive produce. Which is
that
probably
that sounds fair to me, doesn't it? I mean, that they do have downtime. I mean,
it's evidence that really being an executive producer isn't a real job anyway. It's a title, and you still get to take money from
it. Right. That doesn't outrage me.
Okay, let me read the tweet from Trump. Has anyone looked at the really poor numbers of Vanity Fair magazine? Way down, big trouble, dead. Graydon Carter, no talent, will be out. And apparently, from what I understood, that they ripped one of his restaurants. I didn't know he had restaurants, but
there was a restaurant in one of his hotels.
I think it was called Trump Grill or something like that.
They say it was like the worst.
Do they sell his steaks?
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe it's the place where he ate for Cinco de Mayo. Remember when he had the big taco bowl in front of him and said, I love Mexicans, Mexicans love me, or something like that.
I think it further clears the way that clearly he's not going to have a conflict of interest as president. He's reacting to a restaurant review this way.
It's not just because I'm in the media, but newspapers, magazines, and radio stations are businesses. And every time one of them does something that is not to his liking, I really resent the president-elect, or maybe a president, running down, sometimes with false information, that business and the livelihood of those people. He said, Washington Post, losing hundreds of millions, terrible. And I thought, why are you gloating about that?
These it's also not true.
Taxes but in their kids.
It was an absolute
and
lie.
And it's not even true.
He said it about the New York Times. The New York Times has, you know, apparently surged in their online subscriptions.
You know, they have online, when you read them, and I do frequently online, I get the Sunday delivered, but online they say something like, independent journalism now more than ever. And I thought, what a great selling point. You know, Trump can run them down all he wants. If they just come back with that, see, guys, this is why you really need us, I think subscriptions would go up. I am more inclined to subscribe to the Washington Post, just to not only, you know, safeguard independent journalism, but also to thumb my nose at this president.
I'm trying to jump in. Tronc also. Tronc. Yeah, I know. It just makes me giggle saying the word. But Tronc newspapers and Tronc sites and their strategy going forward is to have the Chicago Tribune, LA Times, vetted news for you. And I think that is becoming more valuable than ever with false news and
vetted news for you. Is that what they're going to use?
And, well, anecdotally, vetted, I've heard the same thing. I've heard people have told me, they say, you know, I've subscribed. I took out a new subscription because I want to support journalism.
I get that. I'm still trying to get my head around vetted news for you. Do you guys like that?
I do kind of like that.
It's not bad.
It's not too bad.
I would think the news would be vetted anyway.
You're right, John, you would, but I think a lot of people don't think about that. Clearly they don't, because they were falling for unvetted news. So why not declare yourself, you know, filtered through the truth-o-meter?
Yeah, that's a good idea. So. To me, it seems to be redundant and almost insecure.
Can we get back?
It's like, yeah, you're the... Go ahead, Eric.
I just wanted to touch back on Springfield and what's going on in down there with the governor mounting this campaign. The Illinois Republicans are mounting this campaign, BossMadigan.com. And they are putting on their hit list a whole bunch of state legislators saying, you know, we're coming after you. They took out ads this week, robocalls against J.B. Pritzker, who has just kind of been sniffing around. Maybe he's going to run. This is a wealthy businessman that he might run again as a Democrat against Rauner in 2 years. They're taking robocalls against him. And it just seems to me like this is the wrong thing to be doing right now. I know that they don't like Mike Madigan. I know that they're at a stalemate, but what they're doing is they are forcing the Democrats who are on the Boss Madigan hit list back into Madigan's arms. Who's gonna defend them? Who's gonna support them?
They were never out of his arms.
Well,
good Lord!
Isn't Chris Kennedy on that list now too?
Chris Kennedy wants to rehab. Sneed's been reporting a lot that Chris Kennedy's going to run for governor.
But he's on that Boss
Madigan. Is he on the Boss
Madigan
list?
I thought I read that.
I just don't see the point in picking fights while you're trying to, you know. Ostensibly, you're trying to come to some sort of compromise and negotiate with these guys. You know, like, this is what we're going to do to bring you over to our side a little bit, is we're going to call you names and put you on our hit list.
I'm sorry, but don't you think that, I mean, we're past the point of a compromise, that both sides have decided Madigan started, I mean, frankly, Madigan without showing up to meetings and so on. So, I mean, there's plenty of blame. But they both decided we're going to run out the clock until 2016.
Well, yeah, okay.
I mean, 2018.
2018. Right? And it's 2 years from now,
I
basically.
Know. And that's going to be 4 years without
horrifying.
A budget.
It's horrifying. And, of course, I would also blame the Democrats here. Because could anyone at this table now tell me what is the Democrats' answer to Bruce Rauner's turnaround agenda? What do the Democrats say about what's their plan to make the state economically healthy? Can anyone say? Because I can't.
No.
And I, you know, I basically right now it's to say no to what Rauner wants to do. I get that. I get why they are opposed to some of the things that he wants to do. But I don't know what their alternative plan is. The failure of messaging from the Democrats is just staggering to me. I don't understand why they haven't come forward with a positive message. It's just to them, it all seems to me, it's just like, well, we're just saying no to Madigan. We're blocking Madigan. He's bad for working people. But what is their solution to the pension crisis? What is their solution to the jobs problem in Illinois? Scott's nodding, and I know that I must have said something bad then because Scott's nodding. I must have stepped into it.
But no,
I just
true.
Feel like the Republicans, for all that I disagree with them on a lot of these issues, they are winning the messaging war. And 2 years from now, the Democrats may pay a pretty big price for that.
It's similar to the Republicans saying we're going to get rid of Obamacare. Well, okay, so there's some serious problems with it now that are emerging, but you're going to destroy it, and then what? So it's similar to the Democrats here in Illinois saying,
"I'll steal
no,
that, Jim.
It's all yours. No, no, no.
Is that two?
I'm tweeting that out. Yeah.
No, no, no. To the budget. No more. No, no, no. To pension reform. And yet, okay. So what's your alternative? No. So it's preposterous.
Maybe that's just like a cartoon.
What do you mean,
like,
no? You mean they don't have one, or the answer is no?
They don't seem to have a legitimate one. They keep people are coming forward with some fairly forceful ones. I mean, even Senate President Cullerton has come up with a plan that Republicans kind of can swallow hard and say, okay, we can go with that, and it gets killed in the House.
Well, but yeah, I mean, that you're talking about the pension reform idea.
Yes, yeah.
That he has, but, you know,
that's still hanging
first
out
of all,
there.
First of all, I think it's probably unconstitutional anyway, even Cullerton's plan. But even if it's not, it saves like $3.5 billion a year, which sounds like a lot, but when you got $130 billion pension deficit, it's like, you know, it's nibbling at the edges. You know, point taken that it's not moving, but it's not like there's a big solution out there the Democrats have proposed, and Dan Biss, who's a state senator from up in Evanston, he has proposed some things. He's got a site, but he's not one of the big leaders in this state. He's not someone who's out. He's people. The cameras, the microphones are not on him. I just don't. It's frustrating to me as someone who is watching this, and everyone in this state should be frustrated by what's going on.
Well, I don't mean to bring the same topic over and over again every week, Eric, but for the third week in a row, wouldn't term limits enable some of these people to do the right thing? It seems like there are good ideas or bad ideas out there, but the problem is incompetent or feckless people won't execute them because they're worried about their power or getting reelected. Well, if that wasn't an issue, wouldn't they be more empowered to do the right thing, you know, make these tough choices, which would cost them the election? Oh, wait, I don't have to worry about that. Isn't that down the road what we should continue to think about?
I don't think that that's been borne out in places that have term limits, that you don't see these states all of a sudden, these legislators are making tougher choices, that you're having states that are better run with better budgets and so on. I think ends up happening is that the governor ends up getting more power because the legislators have less power, and the appointed bureaucrats and the lobbyists and so on, the ones who actually know how things work, end up having more power and influence. So, I mean, you know, term limits is an interesting conversation, but it's certainly not the answer right now.
That's two things in one show that I agree with Eric Zorn with.
See, this is why we want you on the
Kristen
podcast.
McQuarrie could come back to this little bed that we're nesting for her.
Yeah, she's going to go nuts.
Hey, what do you guys make of the fact that now 20 electors want to be briefed on the Russian hack and the legitimacy of the election before the December 19th actual voting for the president?
That makes perfect sense to me. It's absolutely constitutional. It's absolutely and positively in line with what Hamilton, Madison had in mind when they were writing the Federalist Papers. They addressed this directly, that the Electoral College there is to protect us from Looney Tunes.
So if you look at it with old eyes rather than current today, I mean that, and it, rather than today eyes, Hillary versus Trump, that's one way to look at it. But if you look at it, why this was established and had this scenario happened in the 1800s, It's a very different view. That's a good point.
What do I
make
well,
it's
of
because
it?
They didn't trust the people back in the 1800s.
Oh, and nor should they. Look what they did this time, for crying out loud.
No, but that's, we've been debating the Electoral College these days for a lot of reasons. Does it give too much power to small states? Does it skew the popular vote? Hillary wins by 2 million. She can't win the election. Second time that's happened.
2.8.
So, it's 2.8 now, isn't it, Steve? But shouldn't they do what the people set them to do? I mean, suppose these electors go, oh, gee, I don't like the looks of this, and they decide not to cast their votes for Trump.
Well,
I think that's a real abdication.
Well, so you ask what we make of this. I make nothing of it. And the reason is because nearly all of the, I think there are 40 of them now that have asked for a briefing, but 39 of them are Democrats. I mean, I think there's one Republican who
there
wants
is one for
on
sure.
This.
Yeah.
Well, so the Democrats are going to vote for Hillary Clinton, but it doesn't matter. It's the Republicans who are going to vote for Trump, and they will. And Trump's going to be the next president.
I don't disagree with you. And if you're right, and if we're not going to give them the briefing, if they are going to be potted plants, to quote Brendan, the whatever his name was, then we should get rid of them. I mean, let's get rid of the electors and give each state the numbers if you want. But this farce of then having people come and cast those votes if they're never going to change them or be entitled to an investigation, let's get rid of them.
There are some states that the state laws that actually dictate that the electors must vote for who won the majority of the vote in that state.
That strikes me as unconstitutional. It's certainly not in the spirit of the Constitution.
Yeah, it is.
Although,
even though
I don't think that would change the results of these elections, the electors are party loyalists. They're party faithful people. To ask somebody to go to Washington and not vote for the candidate from the party that you represent for president.
But then let's just make the number automatic.
Yes, okay, I would agree with that.
Or what if we create a 51st elector or electorate, and let's make it 20 electoral votes. So if you lose the popular vote, how does it work? If you won the popular vote but lost the Electoral College, you would get a 20 elector vote bonus, so that the winner to win the electoral vote without the majority would have to win it by a 20-vote cushion.
This is constitutional amendments.
Okay,
Steve.
The traffic has been very bad.
I'm trying to figure out a way to make it more to even it out a little bit, because I do like the idea of, smaller states having a bigger voice.
John,
I was told there'd be no math.
There wasn't. It was for me. There was no math.
Well,
that was not math.
Explain to me, Scott Stantis, why Donald Trump is not even interested in the dialogue. Why does he not want to know to what degree the Russians hacked the election?
Well, because it helped him win.
No, but
why would you? I mean,
even if it did, and that's gray, but suppose it did, then it's not going to take away his election.
Oh, but it is. It'll delegitimize him.
And that's already been delegitimized. Well, he lost by 2.8 million votes.
Under my plan, he still would have won, because he won by more than 20 electoral votes.
But. Yeah, it was a landslide, Steve.
Yeah.
I think that it's a statesman, which is what he needs to realize he's becoming. He should embrace this flow of information to tell us what happened to this all-important institution. The election.
Well, and I think there is an element of trying to delegitimize his election, and that's what the opposition.
By whom?
I would say by Democrats, by the left, by.
Well, who cares what their motive is? If the CIA and the FBI say that Russians hacked the thing, that's all you need to know.
But you and I both know that's not where it stops.
And if you're sitting in Trump Tower, it does not serve you, and maybe not even the country very well, for you to say, I agree. I might have gotten unfair help from our adversary. Let's look into it. It just doesn't serve him well.
Well, he could at least stay out of the way. I mean, saying that these are the same people that got weapons of mass destruction wrong, you would
I agree with that.
Well, he's not listening to their briefs anyway every day. So
well, he can't. He's got a visit with Kanye. The man's only got so much time.
And it wasn't the CIA that got weapons of mass destruction wrong, by the way, just for the record. CIA people say that they never told them that
it was there.
They never underscored that.
I just want to go back to my little tangent there for a second.
Yes.
So as tight as his schedule evidently is not, but should be, it's striking to me that fresh out of a hospital, suffering from exhaustion, Kanye West says, "I want to go see Donald Trump and talk about life." And Trump says for 15 minutes, "Yeah." What in the world could they have talked about that was meaningful to either of them, except then they get to exit and do a photo op? And I don't know to what end. I got to tell you guys, it was just a reminder to me of how little I know about the world in which I live. I looked at that and thought, what the hell is this? Well, this makes no sense.
Who does it serve? Who benefited from that? Because I don't know the answer. You think so?
I don't know the answer.
Sure.
Well, Donald Trump does.
You think Donald Trump benefits by standing?
I think he wants Kanye to perform at one of his inaugural balls. Kanye will. This is hey, y'all, guess what? Don't be shocked when Kanye shows up.
I hear that marching bands in the D.C. area the high school marching bands don't want to appear at the inaugural. So he's going to have a hard time getting entertainers to show up at his inaugural. So
longtime atheist activist Rob Sherman has passed away. He was in a single plane crash. He was flying, and evidently shortly after takeoff, there was a problem. And evidently, at some high speed, his plane crashed into a field near, what was it, Marengo. He's passed away. I think all of us have had conversations with him. I don't have much to say about it, except it's sad. I never understood the allure of civil aviation like that for some of these people. But, you know, even if you didn't agree with him, he sure was a principled fellow, wasn't he? He sure fought the fights, didn't he?
He really was. He was a really interesting guy. He was sort of a raging narcissist with a streak of humility to it. It was funny. He always appreciated a joke at his expense. He never seemed to take himself too seriously, even though he had an enormous ego. I wrote three dozen columns about the guy over the last 30 years because he would always come up with these interesting issues, these little controversies. He'd inject himself in the middle of it, and I went to numerous meetings where he showed up. Never angry,
no.
Never rude, always pesky.
Pesky, that's a good word.
And I think he did some important things. They weren't always very popular. He did a lot of unimportant things, but some of his fights probably were worth it. I thought so anyway. But, you know, as you described him, in a way, he struck me as a guy who so badly wanted to be in the in crowd that he would take the punch, you know, that you could kind of pick on him and he'd keep coming back in a way. You know what I mean? I mean, I would end every phone call with him, and there were dozens. You know, I'd be like, God bless you, Rob.
Yeah. Oh, wait, my bad.
No, and he would laugh. He would get it. And then he'd call me the next day with another lawsuit that he wanted covered.
That was the thing. I mean, pesky, I don't mean to run the guy down in his untimely death, but he was that. He was, and I don't even mean that in a mean sort of way, but he was just relentless. He was always finding these instances where we should do something about it. And there were times where you didn't want to take the call because you thought, oh, geez, I know you're going to win this argument with me. I don't want to have this conversation.
But he also was clearly incredibly complicated and had, you know, he put his children out there in some lawsuits, and there was some estrangement there and from other members of his family, I know. So, I mean, I was out of town, and so I didn't really find out that it had happened until Monday. And I don't know if I would call him a friend, but he certainly was, a close acquaintance. And I just think he was a pretty fascinating guy. I'd like to read that book, I think.
He's one of those people that, you know, as a person of faith, he flew in the face of my beliefs all the time. I ran into him at a couple of political cartoonist conventions, and he was always more than willing to, you know, engage in discussion and so on. And I think, too, societies need people like him. They need to have these questions raised. And frankly, to have them raised for me to question my own faith and my own and how that applies to public policy and so on. This was an important guy.
I would say this. You know, he was an atheist, but I could never engage him in a conversation about atheism itself. He just said, God is make-believe. He didn't want to talk about it.
He didn't want to argue the point.
He didn't want to be like, he was no Christopher Hitchens or Richard Dawkins. No, right. he was never a philosopher.
You never got him in a bar because he was more than happy to there.
He would never talk about, you know, why do bad things happen to good people. He would never go there. As far as every conversation I had with him, was always about the Constitution and the desirability of keeping religion and state practice separate, and I agree with him on a lot of those issues.
Where
cities and say would try to inject religion into public life, sponsor it in ways they shouldn't be sponsoring it, and he was always throwing the flag on that, and he won a lot of those battles, and I think he actually made progress in that area. He lost a lot of battles too. There's no question about that. But
I don't know if he always succeeded at this, but I think the challenge for atheists is to sort of defang that word, because an atheist is a bad person. They don't even believe in God. Oh, my gosh. You know, who are you? Why would you be that way? What do you believe in the devil? Are you on the other side? Are you a bad person? You can see how that thought train goes. And all the atheists that I've, so many of the atheists that call on my shows or that I've met, they're not bad people. They just don't happen to believe in God like I do.
I was going to say, John, I think he showed that, and this is kind of my view, that it's okay. Both can survive if they're separate.
Yeah.
You know, the government can be absolutely fine without religious symbols and religious events. And religion is absolutely fine, even if it doesn't kick off the chamber hall meeting at every, you know, every month or something like that. Separately can be fine, and they both can thrive. And I just think that's, you know, where he moved us.
Well, so, I mean, the story that I tell real quickly is that Wakanda, he sued them because they had Christian crosses on their water towers. And he sued them, and he won because you shouldn't have Christian crosses on your water towers. And the people of Wakanda
That's
responded.
Holy water,
the
Eric.
People in Wakanda responded, you know, by having 1,000 crosses bloom. I mean, literally just about every home in Wakanda put lighted crosses on their property. And I went and saw Rob, and I interviewed him. I said, they sure showed you, didn't they? You know, I mean, I was just, you know, having a conversation.
Sure.
And he said that was great. He said, that's what religion is. Religion should be private, and it shows you that the people don't need government to do religion for them. And he was, and so I thought
right,
that was
exactly.
a great response to that situation. So anyway, Rob Sherman, rest in peace.
Let's wrap this podcast up with our recommendations, something that we are watching, listening to, reading, or consuming. I told you guys I want to do, at least since it's binge season, the holidays are here, snow and cold, reason to stay inside and watch something at great length. You might consider something you would recommend for people to binge watch over the holidays. Remember last year it was a big one with, multi-part TV series about the guy in Wisconsin.
Making a Murderer.
Making a Murderer.
Merry
a lot
Christmas.
Of people just powered through that. I know, that was,
yeah,
I think
wow.
we did that like Chris. It was unbelievable, but everybody at Christmas Vacation last year power watched that thing.
The kid got out, though, right?
Yes.
The Brett Dassey was his name, little Brendan Dassey, the young guy who was...
Yeah, who was clearly
not involved in it, but the other guy...
Nothing was clearly about that. Every time you think you've got that thing figured out, somebody in Wisconsin goes back to court and the story seems to change to me. Okay, so can I start?
Yeah.
I'm going to recommend Tremé. If you haven't watched Tremé, I'm going to recommend West Wing. And I'll just also say we are power watching through The Crown.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have watched that, but I just think that show is terrific.
Wow.
The Crown on Netflix.
Okay.
It's about the royal family, and I am not one of those people that gives a fig about the royal family, but the story is really well told. It's every bit as good, in my judgment, as Downton Abbey. How about you, Steve Bertrand?
Absolutely The Crown. In fact, at Christmas Day, I'm going to go home and set up Netflix for my mom. My parents, but my mom especially, who does give a huge fig about that stuff, so she can watch it because it's just great. I've been watching, as I said last week, Mozart in the Jungle. A little weak this season, not quite as big. But I want to mention a movie because I'm going to go home tonight, I think, and watch Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. Because I miss David Bowie, and David Bowie's one of the people who died in 2016. He was in this 1983 movie where he played a British prisoner of war in World War II, and he was in a Japanese camp. And I watched it when I was, you know, much younger, just out of college. I want to see it again at this time to see if it's the same movie I remember. But do you guys ever see that movie? No?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
The keenest line was the Japanese guy holding my recited every Christmas was, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. And so I run around saying that all the time. I think I'm going to watch the movie again to remember.
Fair enough. By the way, quick movie note. I saw La La Land a couple nights ago. The singing and dancing movie. It's a singing and dancing movie. It's not the best movie I saw this year. Manchester by the Sea is. But it is really fun. If you want to get away from it all, La La Land will not disappoint.
Really? That's it. I saw the previews for that, and they looked just awful. But
I know. Me too, Eric. I thought, really? Here's what you got to do. Opening scene of La La Land. They're in a car, a traffic jam in Los Angeles, and all the cars are sitting there. You know that scene on a ramp, and nobody's going anywhere. They all get out and start singing and dancing. And if you can't get on that bus, you're not going to like the movie. But if you go, okay, this is fun to watch, you'll have a great time. It's a very thin plot, but the singing is pretty good, and the sets are beautiful. It's just an adorable movie.
Fun.
Scott Stanis, what do you like this week?
Two things. For binge watching, I would watch Black Mirror, Netflix's Netflix.
Oh, I've heard a lot about that.
Oh, it is, honest to goodness, if you liked Twilight Zone, which I do.
I do, too.
This is like a 21st century Twilight Zone, and what I love about it is it incorporates all the new tech. A lot of the stories take place, like, what would you say, John, 15 years in the future, maybe?
Right,
just technology's increased a little bit. But I love how, you know, the interference and the immersion of the of this technology in our lives, and how it's really kind of screwed us up, and how this it can get far worse. So that's absolutely worth watching.
There's all independent episodes, but all tied together by that theme.
Like I said, very much like Twilight Zone in that sense. And what I love too is, and John will corroborate this, a lot of the stories don't have neat little package endings. There's like they're left either open ended or a big part of the plot is left unresolved, which I love stuff
like
that.
The Twilight Zone was like that too. Twilight Zone, you'd be like, ooh. At the end.
What if we all had chips in our eyes that were constantly recording things?
I know. That's
and then
one
when you
stories.
Got into an argument with somebody, you could just say, here, watch this, and you could replay it on a screen or even internally in your mind's eye, and then see what you said.
That's
you could
one of the stories.
Everything. What a great story.
It really is. So absolutely worth a watch. If I can say, this is a Christmas tradition for my wife and I every year, six of the last seven because they suspended for a year, but a Klingon Christmas Carol, which is Charles Dickens' great tale done in Klingon with English subtitles. And it's being performed at Heartland Studio Theater at 7016 North Glenwood. And like I said, my wife and I have gone to it every year. We have friends fly up from Birmingham sometimes.
His long-suffering wife. Did I say that?
Oh, no. The second
she loves you.
A friend of ours said, hey, I just saw this. Do you guys want to go? And my wife was without missing a beat, was hell to the yes. We totally went to this. So Klingon mach.
What is yes in Klingon?
Oh, I'm sure to explain it, it's very spit-centric language.
Reminds me of one of my favorite scenes in Big Bang Theory, where they're playing Klingon Scrabble and they're arguing over what a word is and isn't. You know, I've recommended this before in this podcast, but for binge watching, I think there's nothing better than Freaks and Geeks, which is a 13 episode show that is about life in the Detroit suburbs for teenagers back in the late 1970s. It was made, I think, in the 90s. It was an NBC series, I think, in the mid-90s, and only 13 episodes, but it was like the debut acting, major acting thing for James Franco, Jason Segel, Seth Rogen, and Linda Cardellini. It's just terrific, and I say it's manageable. 13 episodes, and anyway, I love me my Freaks and Geeks.
Thank you, Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune, and Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. Christian McQuarrie will join us another day. Scott, we love it when you fill in, even with a scratchy voice.
Well, thanks for having me, man.
Being part of the pod. Our engineer has been Ben Cortez today. Kristen Decker is the producer of The Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams. Hope you have a happy holiday, and we'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!